This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million. What the heck? What the actual labor market heck? That's where we start today. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday, today, 9 Feb. Good as always to have you along, everybody. 196,000. Actually, that's the tally we got from the Labor Department this morning of the number of people who filed first-time claims for unemployment benefits last week. That is, historically speaking, low, very low. And it is that low in the face of the Federal Reserve trying really, really hard to get the labor market to be a little bit less irrationally exuberant, if I could channel Alan Greenspan here for a second. Maybe the question in this economy right now is what in the world is going on with this labor market? Marketplace's Lily Jamali drew the short straw this morning and got the assignment to answer that question in 2 minutes of radio.
The cascade of data that economists look at tells the story of a strong labor market. So much so, says University of Michigan professor Betsy Stevenson, that they've been asking whether it's too strong.
Right. Are employers trying to hire a bunch of phantoms, people who don't exist? And are they just finding it too hard to find people?
This labor market seemingly still has legs, she says, even as employers report less trouble filling jobs. This after the Federal Reserve raised interest rates 8 times over the last 11 months. Brad Hirschbein, senior economist at the W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research, says the Fed's job is to keep employment high and inflation low. And right now, he says policymakers are keeping close tabs on how much wages are rising.
The Fed is actually going to pay even more attention to that than the number of jobs being created, because that's what their fear is, that the wage growth is going to feed into inflation.
Elise Gould, senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute, says it might be odd to think of policymakers as wanting to see wage growth fall.
People are like, wait, what do you mean? And I think it's important to note that inflation is actually coming down faster than nominal wage growth is coming down.
That means there are genuine wage gains, says Kate Bonn, chief economist at the Washington Center for Equitable Growth.
What we're seeing here is that maybe workers actually are sharing a little bit more in those gains of a healthy economy, which is a good sign.
Still, certain sectors have suffered high-profile layoffs, says Ellis Pfeiffer, managing director of fixed income research at Raymond James.
The tech business has seen the opportunity to shed some workers.
As have the media and finance sectors.
So it's been a very mixed picture.
But strong hiring in sectors like hospitality and food services could be offsetting those layoffs. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Wall Street today, there was that first-time claims report, which traders read as more interest rate increases are a come. And there were some earnings that underwhelmed. And look, it's Thursday. Maybe the algorithms are just ready for the weekend. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. This one goes out to the early birds in some 24 states who are already banging away at their federal taxes. Not so fast. The Internal Revenue Service is telling people in those states, specifically states that sent out some kind of tax rebate, or as they were in some places called, inflation relief payments. The IRS says don't file yet because they have to figure out whether those payments are taxable. We asked Marketplace's Samantha Fields what's going on there.
Tax policy is Richard Auchsher's thing. He works at the Tax Policy Center in D.C., and people come to him when they're confused about something tax-related, which is pretty often.
I feel like my job is typically to be like, it's not that complicated.
But this time?
This time it really is.
Complicated, that is. But why? Shouldn't it be easy for the IRS to say either, yes, that payment you got from the state last year is taxable, or no, it's not? Well, for one, Auchsher says every state took a different approach in terms of how much money it sent, to whom, and why. And
the reason and the why and the how is now going to start to affect the possibility of this being taxable.
Remember those economic impact payments or stimulus checks the federal government sent out earlier in the pandemic? Those were not taxable.
Because we were still in the COVID emergency.
Francine Lippman, a law professor at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, says disaster relief payments are generally not taxed.
2022, good news, bad news, it's no longer COVID relief distributions. In some cases it is, in some cases it's not.
If a state just gave out money last year to help people struggling with inflation, or just because, that may well be taxable. Or it might not be. It also depends on who got the payments. Everyone? Just low-income people? The IRS is trying to figure all of this out for almost 24 different states. Jared Walczak at the nonprofit Tax Foundation says that won't answer another big question, though, which is why is the IRS just doing this now?
The IRS has known or should have known for a year that there were going to be questions about the taxability of state tax rebates.
But it waited until tax season was underway to make any kind of statement.
And that statement was just, hold on, wait and see.
The IRS says it will have an answer for taxpayers soon. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
A lot of people at the height of the pandemic and now here in the later stages are spending a lot of time thinking about their health and wellness. That, of course, is a business opportunity, and we have seen, in fact, a boom in sales of vitamins and dietary supplements and apps to help us sleep better and be more mindful and maybe stick to a diet. The advertising for those products, though, sometimes is not, well, on the level. The Federal Trade Commission has noticed that and has given its guidance for health and wellness marketing an update, including stricter rules to ensure that those claims about health benefits are truthful and supported by scientific research. Marketplace's Savannah Marr has that one.
Here's an ad I can't seem to get away from.
Collagen. I bought the viral TikTok liquid collagen. Oh my gosh, the results are insane.
It's a video montage of some beautiful young people with great skin drinking this orange goop.
It's amazing because just one tablespoon a day helps too. Reduce appetite, lift skin, strengthen hair and nails, and smooth cellulite.
The ad doesn't cite any research backing these claims.
It also contains amino acids to support gut health and immune-boosting vitamin C.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with my appetite or my immune system, but maybe these people know something I don't?
It's very much tapping into our insecurities that we are not well enough, and it taps into our hope that we could be better.
Christine Whelan is a professor of consumer science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She says the wellness industry is definitely having a moment, fueled by young consumers and social media.
The challenge is that we'd all like to say that we're savvy consumers who understand that certain products may not live up to the hype that we're seeing on our social media feeds.
But when the algorithm puts that supplement ad in front of you for the 20th time,
it gets harder and harder to resist.
Next thing you know, you're spending $50 on a product with claimed health benefits that are untested, probably dubious, and maybe even dangerous. The FTC recently put the wellness industry on notice with an update to its marketing guidelines.
It's long overdue. I'm glad they finally did it.
Claire Jones heads up Loudbird Marketing, which works with health-focused companies that sell things like CBD products and nutrition coaching and tea cleanses. She says the update clears up some gray areas that marketers have been exploiting for a while.
Traditionally, within the marketing and advertising field, we've thought, okay, as long as I'm saying may, could, might.
But the FTC is cracking down on what it calls vague qualifying terms and says health claims need to be backed by relevant scientific research. Jones says large, established companies that have been getting away with this stuff will adapt. For newer and smaller ones, backpedaling will be expensive.
I do think that the barrier to entry has been raised a bit, but I also think that's a good thing because what we're doing is really impacting people's health.
But Jones says one common form of promotion in the industry remains unregulated.
Gummies that make your period feel better? Yes.
First up, I have my new dairy and gluten digestive aid. I love this supplement. I brought it.
I'm super excited for the PMS gummies and how they'll affect my symptoms each month.
When social media influencers are hired to promote a product, like in that liquid collagen ad, they have to follow the FTC's rules. But when companies just send them stuff for free, influencers can say pretty much whatever they want in their technically unsolicited reviews.
Support. I love the supplement. I take 2 capsules every day, and it has definitely helped aid my allergy symptoms.
It's just gotten like very Wild West out there with that type of advertising.
It's a dangerous loophole, says Christine Whelan at the University of Wisconsin, because popular influencers have a lot of, well, influence on their followers.
When a beautiful, fit person who we admire tells us to do something, human nature is that we want to do it. We want to be like them. And if they're taking this supplement, you might try it too.
And maybe you think, well, these sparkly vitamins aren't going to hurt me. Whelan says the harm is financial when consumers drop hundreds of dollars a year on untested products. Money that could have been spent on things we know improve our health, like vegetables or actually going to the doctor. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
That health and wellness spending that Savannah was just talking about might happen at a CVS or a Walgreens, or it might happen at much smaller businesses, maybe a neighborhood bodega or a corner store. Those kinds of places can be local institutions, so we spent some time at one for today's installment of our series, Adventures in Housing.
I am Sarah Valdez, and I am the owner of Sarah's Market, located in East LA. Sarah's Market came into the family over 60 years ago, which first belonged to my great uncle, Pedro Martinez, but it was called Hilda's Market when he had it. Then he passed it down to my mom and dad, which they renamed it to Sarah's. And they were here for about another 30 years or so. And then Stephen, my husband, and I took over when my parents were getting ready to retire and kept it at Sarah's Market, even though he jokes around and says it's going to be Stephen's Market, but still Sarah's Market. My parents own the whole property. I grew up in the back house, which they still live there. So I've been here my whole life. I used to work here when I would come out of elementary school, which is down the street. So I was in charge of chips, which were then only a quarter. My mom worked here all day. So she would always tell me, you know, you can play, but you can only play where I can see, which is technically right in front of the door. So if I rode my bike, I was going from basically our driveway to the end of the gate. And then I used to play hopscotch right on the sidewalk. We're up by 6. We're technically here at 7:30. So in the morning, you know, we have our morning rush. So we do sell pan dulce and bolillos. We close at 7, but we don't really leave here till like maybe 9 o'clock. We're here a lot. And this is Monday through Saturday. So Sunday is the only day that we're closed.
Like, we laugh about it all the time. I feel like my house is like a hotel. Like, I just go sleep, shower, and the next day we're back here. When we go home, I know we're going home, but it doesn't feel like home. But here, the second we get off the freeway, it's really hard to explain, but this is home. This is where I do everything, like, versus where we live. Sometimes I don't even know where things are at still, and we've been there for almost 10 years, and I'm like, I still don't know where that's at. But yeah, this here, the store, this feels like home. If it's not my mom, it's neighbors that are bringing us dinner. Like, just yesterday, one of our neighbors, she sent us home with a pot of pozole. We've known each other for such a long time. It's like we're like our own little family around here. Thankfully, you know, we still have our customers that are coming in every day. It's not as busy as it used to be, but it's slowly starting to kind of pick up. But I do feel that right now it's some really tough times across the board everywhere. Day by day is how we're taking it. Just day by day and see how the day goes. And tomorrow's a brand new day. And we can either figure something else new or just ride the wave.
Sara Valdez, she runs Sara's Market in East L.A. Tell us your housing story, would you? Marketplace.org is where you can do that. Coming up.
Upside down, inside out. I'm about to show all you folks what it's all about.
EMTs, saving lives and making rhymes. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's off 249.7 tenths of 1% today on the blue chips, finished at 33,699. The NASDAQ down 120 points, about 1%, 11,789. The S&P 500 subtracted 36 points, 0.8%. 4,081. It is, in case you were unawares, as was I, today is National Pizza Day. And me, even if you're not currently celebrating with a hot slice, strings of cheese dripping down your chin, we can at least let you know how some publicly traded pizzerias are doing. I don't know if they're pizzerias, but they're companies. You know what I mean, right? Anyway, Domino's up just under 0.4% today. Papa John's shares slipped 0.25%. Yum Brands, Pizza Hut, right? Down by just under 0.2%. If you're enjoying a frozen pizza, by the way, know that you are far from alone. According to census and consumer survey data, more than 200 million Americans were estimated to have eaten frozen pies in 2020 alone. Those sold under the DiGiorno brand are made by Nestle, in case you were curious, which is down 1.25% on the Swiss Stock Exchange. Today, you're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. While it is debatable whether the world needs a Toy Story 5 or a Frozen 3 or a Zootopia 2, I guess it's going to be, for sure the Walt Disney Company needs them. Once and present CEO Bob Iger, back in the corner office not even 3 months, said on the company's earnings call this week that it's time for Disney to go through a transformation. That's his word. Iger's going to transform $5.5 billion in cost, in part by laying off 7,000 people, and he is going to focus on the economics of Disney's streaming services by leaning in, again his words, to proven franchises, see the above-referenced sequels. As Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes points out, Disney is already one of the world's top content spenders.
In a crowded market, studios and streamers know content has to stand out, says Charles Schrager, a professor at NYU in Fordham.
It needs to be excellent, and one of the ways that it can be excellent and get attention is by being expensive.
Disney's on track to spend at least $30 billion on content in the current fiscal year. It hasn't stinted on its Star Wars or Marvel productions. And Schrager, who used to be an HBO executive, says it's not likely to. He calls this the blockbuster strategy.
It's smarter to make a bunch of really expensive movies than it is to have a larger portfolio of inexpensive movies.
For its linear TV channels, Disney may also invest in shows that it thinks will have a long life on streaming, says Paul Erickson, an independent media consultant.
And so should we commission another season of this particular show? Well, yes, because we know that it has a really loyal fan base.
Erickson says we may be less likely to see Disney take chances on unknown stars or new genres. This doesn't surprise film and television producer Carrie Antholis.
I mean, I think it continues a trend that has already been happening in the world of film.
Antholis' work includes the limited series Blackbird and We Own This City. He expects Disney to not make as many shows that take risks.
They may have less money to do those kind of grown-up oriented, sophisticated narratives.
Because they're focusing more on franchises like Toy Story or Frozen. There are other benefits for Disney to doing this. It makes the public more attached to these characters. Again, Charles Schrager.
You know, you feel good about Disney, so then perhaps you take a cruise. Perhaps you feel good about, going to one of the Disney parks.
Because the more people see Elsa or Baby Yoda on screen, the more they'll want to see them in other places. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
It hasn't been in the news quite as much of late as it was, say, during the really acute phases of the pandemic, but healthcare is still hurting, staffing shortages mostly, doctors' practices, clinics, hospitals, also emergency medical services, which in practice affects how and how fast 911 calls get answered. From the Gulf States newsroom, Shalina Chetlani took a ride in an emergency vehicle to see how a crisis does get handled.
Noah Feldman is an emergency responder for the city of New Orleans.
This is a very stressful job. Working for the city is nonstop.
For him, 911 calls like this are fairly common.
I have a breach delivery in progress in a third.
All right, I'm in the third on 610. I can drop off.
There's an emergency. A woman is going into labor, but the baby is breached. Feldman turns on his siren, and we start zigzagging through cars and past red lights down the bumpy streets of New Orleans.
Do people generally move out of the way?
No, as you can see.
Today, we're riding in a Sprint unit, which is basically an SUV with a siren and without back seats. They don't transport patients, but it's packed with medical supplies, so Feldman can give emergency care till an ambulance shows up. And these days, waiting for an ambulance can take a while.
We didn't have a unit available because they were stuck on the wall. So they're
stuck in the queue at the hospital, waiting for the patient to be checked in. The ambulance can't leave until that transfer happens. It can create dire situations for people like Alana Jefferson, the expectant mother, attached to the ultrasound machine. Jefferson needs an ambulance, so Feldman calls a partner from another parish. They show up in good spirits.
Upside down, inside out. I'm about to show all you folks what it's all about.
I'm feeling a lot of pain. What they making me laugh.
They serenaded and safely transported Jefferson to a hospital. Jefferson made it to her emergency C-section. But Feldman explains that emergency services have been strapped on the heels of the pandemic. EMS data shows the number of patients who end up stuck outside the hospital before receiving a bed has more than doubled in New Orleans since 2019. They end up waiting anywhere from 20 minutes to more than an hour. And this isn't just happening in New Orleans. Justin Back is the president of Acadian Ambulance based in Lafayette, Louisiana, a few hours away.
The root cause of it is a staffing crisis. It's a lack of capacity on the provider side, on the transport entity side as well.
Back says across the country, healthcare workers are retiring or quitting because of burnout and low pay. It's hard to recruit people into healthcare too. That means hospitals often don't have enough staff to accept patients and ambulances quickly. EMS is struggling as well. New Orleans has a 40% turnover rate among its staff.
In a lot of cases, EMS are the safety net provider in a lot of rural communities. And so this is a very, very dangerous place for the industry and the nation to be.
Back says Acadian Ambulance is trying to tackle the problem by creating incentives for people to become an EMT, like paying for their training. And they've given raises to staff, and they're even trying to recruit people from abroad. But so far, no one thing is getting patients through the system faster. It's not enough. After helping the woman with the breech baby, Feldman drives to a trauma center in the heart of New Orleans.
So a lot of these units have been here for a while.
There, about a half dozen ambulances from all across the state are lined up. All of them are waiting to transfer patients to the hospital so they can go back into service.
It's not a show up, go to the hospital, get a bed. I mean, there's a slow process. I mean, some of our solution involves, you know, making sure we don't take every patient to the same hospital.
Feldman, who a few months after this interview decided to leave his post at New Orleans EMS to become a physician assistant, says progress will depend on recruiting people and setting them up to thrive, so they decide to stay and take those 911 calls. In New Orleans, I'm Shalina Chotlani for Marketplace.
Final note on the way out today. Anybody out there remember Yahoo, one of the internet originals back in the day, a powerhouse of web search and content? Now, not so much. It's owned by the private equity firm Apollo Global Management, 90% of it anyway, and that goes a long way to explaining the news today. The company said this morning it's going to lay off more than 20% of its people by the end of the year, 1,000 of them this week alone. Axios reports that that 20% comes to about 1,600 people. Total. All right, we are going, but here is your moment of economic context. New York City, for all that people were predicting, it's hollowing out during the pandemic. Oh, it's clearly back. Data from the real estate firms Douglas Elliman and Miller Samuel about apartment rents in Manhattan. Average rent in Manhattan in January this year versus last, up 13% to $5,142 a month. A month. An apartment. John Buckley, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Petra, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. Amir Bibawe is the managing editor. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.